Maybe not, though. Maybe not. You know, maybe that actually emerged from him. I don't know.
It's interesting because I had a conversation with someone who was from India when I actually went to go and see Ed Dutton speak. I did a little quick thing about Nomos thing because I was actually promoting the Birmingham event at that point, partially why I was there. But he's somebody who is one of the people who divides his time between the two places. And he had a very kind of first-hand take about that, that he feels quite aggrieved by the fact that he doesn't feel like he belongs anywhere. Because he was taken to basically his ancestral homeland and to see his ancestral shrines. And he said that was great and everything. But like he works and lives in Britain. He goes to India when he can. But he doesn't feel the connection with his ancestors that, you know, they felt with the land. But he basically just said, like, I realized I won't belong in Britain because, like, my shrines aren't here. My ancestors aren't buried here. Like, in a spiritual sense, this land will never be sacred to me, no matter how hard I try. And it makes me really sad. And that's such, I think, such a powerful framing and something we forget, that there is really the sacred aspect of the, you know, the land and the race and the people and the ritual and all of that stuff. As we like to talk about, we've talked about a lot of the kind of the metaphysics of sex on this channel when we talked about Eros, but there's a lot of kind of the metaphysics and the sacred aspect of race and being a people. And that is completely not only absent, but it is forbidden in the modern world. It is seen as, if you, especially if you are like a white person in quotes, or a British person, or whatever kind of Western nation you're from, if you're not part of one of the designated native groups, having a spiritual and metaphysical connection to both the idea of your race and your ancestors is seen as you being like an actual Nazi, no matter what you believe or who you are or how you identify with it. That is seen as one of the strongest hallmarks of effectively being evil.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be nothing but a consumer. You're supposed to really just live in the present and define yourself by whatever you happen to be doing today, this week, whatever clothes you happen to be wearing now, etc. I wonder if the same will eventually be, the same expectation will eventually be made of non-whites, or if they will always be, because they're just now privileged, you could say. It's understood that they're going to have cultural ties to the ancestral country. And so the demand is not made that they just see themselves as consumers. That's specifically for us. But I wonder if eventually the program will advance and they'll be expected to just see themselves in the same way as we are now.
Possibly. It might get to a point. Things might get to a point where it's so extreme that somebody who isn't mixed race, who can identify themselves as nationality, is put upon by kind of what we would now consider as the white people rules. That if you identify yourself with a nation state and with a people, you are dangerous and you don't fit in with, you know, the global state. You are not part of the Great Beige Horizon, as that weird CBC race mixing rap they put out said about the fact that they're going to breed people into a homogenous beige mass with no culture and no history.
Well, that's it's Clement Attlee in 1946. You know, if we blend all the races of the world, there will be no more wars.
Yeah, it's one of the things that there's quite a high bar.
God.
Yeah, he did actually say that.
Pretty much word for word.
Yes. I think there's a pretty high bar, though, for being English, as it were. We're going to do a follow-on stream at some point. Sorry to not include you in this, Wells, but we're probably just going to do one called, like, Who Are the English? As a bit of a nod, let's be fair. But just to go over some of this stuff in a little bit more of a structured way and talk about, you know, what actually makes the English, and have a pretty basic answer to that question, as some people seem incapable of doing. But it's not only genetics. You can have someone who is genetically English, but doesn't identify with England because they haven't been raised here. And, you know, they have been raised overseas, or they don't know the culture and they don't know the history. And you have to have those two elements. There's the idea that as long as you're culturally, in quotes, British, that's good enough. But really, you need to be both. You need to be both, you know, passively of the land and actively engaging with it, or else you lose who you are. And that's, I think that's the big lie that most people are told. Like, English is something you are, but it is also something you do.
Well, I don't know if we maybe want to go back to my speech from Nomos London, the quote right at the bottom, a little bit from Francis Parker Yockey, because if you're going to have a view of race and people want something to go and read on this to get to kind of where we are, a lot of the stuff he has to write in Imperium about race, for someone who you're told is this, like, loony, you know, frothing at the mouth, Nazi, anti-Semite, this, that, and the next thing, he's actually a very reasonable man. And his view of race is like one that's ultimately sort of subjective. He's like, well, you know, the nation of immigrants or the linguistic group or any sort of, you know, objective standard to either reinforce or destroy sort of nationhood is... it's all sort of irrespective. It matters not because it is there and we live as if it exists and we continue to do so. And the only certain people, and he goes on to use this phrase, men of race, are those that truly both embody and sort of exemplify the nationhood itself. Men of race are scattered through all populations everywhere, through all races, peoples, nations. In each unit, they make up the warriors, the leaders of action, the creators in the sphere of politics and war. Thus, in the subjective sense, there is also a hierarchy of race. Above the men of race, below those without race. The first are swept up into action and events by the great cosmic rhythm of motion. The second are passed over by history. The first are the materials of high history. The second have outlasted every culture. And when the stillness resumes its sway over the landscape after that whirlwind of events, they are the great mass. And I've got a little bit of ad here just talking about how, for what we might even dare to refer to as Big C culture, this idea of culture being one with both race and faith and the land, should be the bedrock of all we do, for this view is a synthesis of civic, ethnic and religious patriotism, which looks far beyond today's ochlocracy into the past and the future for elites that can produce and protect what is most important to us. And that's the, I think, one of the things as well that separates us from the more traditional ethno-nationalist view, which is that there is some sort of, you know, equality, but only for whites, or the welfare state, but only for whites, which is a view I can be sympathetic to some degree. But the philosophy behind that, that doesn't then have a hierarchy, you know, outside of races and within the races themselves, I think is misplaced. And that if you really want to get into, you know, not necessarily, I don't know, you brought up the horseshoe earlier, but one of the things that really sets out the understanding of race within the right-wing view as opposed to the left-wing view is that the hierarchy isn't just between them, but also within.
Yes. You're almost getting into the great men of the place and the time of yes. The race kind of thing as well there. But
oh, absolutely. You know, I was doing research early this year in January about my hometown and Edinburgh, which is 20 miles away from it. And this really came through. It was like 100 years ago. And it really came through that there was a sense of the people, not just as a sort of, you know, blob, a mass of people, but a sense of hierarchy, and so which provides structure. It provides creates from what would otherwise be disparate atoms. It creates a structure, and then that is something that can cope with the world and interact with the world. Now, that's not to negate the individual in any way. It's just to say that, practically speaking, I think this is what a healthy people is. It's a collective creature, and you know, it has abilities and tendencies and so on. But fundamentally, it has hierarchy, because without that, you're just it's just a mess. I mean, it's the whole thing about the organised minority versus the disorganised majority. It's a similar principle, really. You can either have function and structure and hierarchy, or you can have just disastrous equality everywhere.